Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Welcome. We will be taking calls after the half hour. The number is 646-716-9663. Tonight, I have a powerful person, Mark David Gerson, with me. And Mark, David, I can't really say who you are. I know you illuminate. You bring light to words, light to movies, light to many things. Could you tell us about yourself?
I can. Primarily, I'm a writer, but I'm not even sure if that's true. I am someone who inspires you to tell your stories and to open your heart and let the truths that reside there come out onto the page or wherever. I'm the author of 10 books, soon to be 11, four of which, soon to be five, are about writing and creativity and the creative process, all of which really approach that from a spiritual perspective. I'm also the author of three novels, a visionary fantasy trilogy called the Quintana Trilogy, which is on its way to becoming a trilogy of epic motion pictures. I'm also the author of a memoir and a sort of memoir. And I'm also a photographer and an artist. And one time I was a sound healer. I don't do that work too much anymore. So kind of your all-around Renaissance creative spiritual guy.
Well, definitely. You and I have met several times in the last 4 or 5 decades in different conferences and different places. And I am inspired by you.
Well, that's awesome. I'm doing my job.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Okay. So what do you have to tell my audience about creativity? You know, I write a lot, too, and I think I've got 8 or 9 books now. And sitting down for me to do that, the discipline that was required used to be tremendous, and then somehow it just fell into this place where, like, it's time to write. What do you have to tell all our creative people out there that could help us?
Well, the first thing I'm going to say is that whether you think you are or not, and just to the listeners, you're all creative. So I'm talking to all of you, whether you believe yourself to be creative or not, because we're all creative. We're inherently and innately creative. It just shows up for each of us in different ways. Not all of us choose to channel that into writing, but it seems that increasingly many do. I liked how you described in brief your journey from needing serious discipline to just knowing when it was time to write, because that's really the journey that I take people on as well. I have a very unorthodox view of discipline. In fact, when I was working on my book on screenwriting, I actually looked up the word discipline in the dictionary and found things like punishing as part of the definition.
Yeah, the first definition is to punish somebody, huh?
Yeah, well, it's punishing you for not doing what you're supposed to, basically. And its origins come from I think it's the Middle English, and it's also pretty harsh. So when we think about discipline, we're already boxing ourselves into a punishing routine that is by definition, by its very nature, uncreative. So what I'd like to talk about is are things that I know that you talk about in terms of spirituality, because really, when it comes right down to it, if you apply all the precepts you know and hopefully are at least trying to practice about spirituality, your creativity,
uh-huh,
it's all the same thing. Be in the moment. trust your intuition, trust your guidance. In my sense, I would say trust your muse, trust your book, trust your story, trust your article.
It's real important to pay attention to what you really want. It's so easy to get distracted. And I mean, for years it was one distraction. The phone would ring and I'd answer it and, you know, all these other different things. But pay attention to yourself. What do I want? I want to be creative. I want to get these words into life. And it's not necessarily on the paper for me anymore. It was getting words on the paper, and then it was bringing the words to life or life
yes.
later on.
Yes.
I mean, it took a couple of decades to get there, but...
tell me about it.
So tell me, what is your website, Mark, David?
It's Mark David Gerson, all one word. It's Gerson, GERSON.com. And in fact, if you want to look, if anybody wants to look for me anywhere online, mostly my username is that, Mark David Gerson, all one word. So you'll find me that way.
Okay. Well,
and
I really love fiction books that have spiritual or lesson energy. And your series, which is soon to be a movie, that's the Quintana trilogy.
You got it.
Moonquest, Starquest, and Sunquest. Tell me a little bit about the fiction part and how
sure.
you put so much magic and light into it.
Sure. I'm going to backtrack a little bit because I want to tell you how the Moon Quest happened, because that really also speaks not only to the story itself, but to what we've been talking about creativity. I had never, it also talks about, because you said, what do you want, what do people want to do? I would frame it, what are your passions? Sometimes we don't know what our passions are, or we have buried our passions, and that was certainly true for me with writing. But I kind of unearthed enough of that I was teaching. I was teaching a writing workshop one day in Toronto, where I was living at the time. And when I teach or lead a workshop, I hardly ever write as the participants are writing. It's really, I want to hold space and be available and all of that. But this day, I had taken them through an exercise actually using a tarot deck. And when they were writing, instead of me kind of sitting and just, you know, watching them and just being present, a little voice, the voice of my muse, the voice of the book, perhaps, said, okay, you pick a card. I'd had them pick one of the, well, in this deck, only the major arcana had pictures. I had them pick one of the major arcana and then led them to kind of an open-eye guided experience with their card into writing. And so I picked a card. The card I picked was the Chariot, which I'm sure had its own significance, but I began to write. And what emerged on the page by the time the writing period was over became the opening scene of the first draft of a novel that I didn't know that I had in me, that I didn't know that I wanted to write, and that I knew absolutely nothing about. And for some bizarre reason, the next morning, I just picked up where I'd left off and kept going. And I learned the story as it unfolded for me on the page. The story, as it unfolded, takes place in a very dystopian kind of land. It's a mythical time and place called Quintana, hence the name of the trilogy, where storytelling has been banned. Storytellers have been exiled at best, put to death at worst. And the legend has it that the moon, in this story called Menor, the moon was so saddened by the silence in the land that she cried tears that extinguished her life. The moon had not been seen for many generations. And so the Moon Quest then becomes a quest to restore story and dream and vision to the land, and in so doing, bring life back to the moon. So that's the Moon Quest. And each of the next story, the Star Quest, picks up in the next generation. The main character's daughter in the Star Quest, and the following book, the Sun Quest, is a generation following that. It's her son. So it's a kind of a multi-generational epic fantasy. Each story is self-contained, but they're all linked, and of course, the end of the final story, as I discovered as the author, because of course I know nothing, at least not consciously, all three stories come full circle to a conclusion that I could never, ever have consciously imagined.
Isn't it amazing? All three of the books are, the name of the books are tarot cards too, the sun, the moon, and the star.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, it wasn't any of those cards that, ironically, that inspired the book. It was the chariot.
Movement, yes. I can understand that. How did you feel? Didn't you write a screenplay about these three?
Yes, so I actually, before the Moon Quest was published, it had been kind of lagging and not much had been happening. And a friend of mine said, who was herself trying to get into the film industry, she said, why don't you write a screenplay? And I said, I don't know nothing but birth and no screenplay. So I let it go. And she kept at me, you know. My muse has very willing nags in her employ, and they keep going after me until I do what I'm told. And in this case, it took several requests, you know, several times, and finally, that one day it just felt right. So I popped into Borders and looked for some books on screenwriting and found nothing that really spoke to my way of approaching creativity, because screenwriting is very structured, the approach to it as well as the doing of it, which is why I ended up writing a book on screenwriting. And I just began, and I ended up adapting the manuscript, not yet published, in much the same way that I had written the book, which was I listened to the story, and I asked it what to do. Oh, obviously, I did read some books and find out, you know, how to structure, you know, I mean, the format and all the kind of technical things, but I ignored all the stuff about outlines and index cards and three-act structure, and I simply did what I do best and what I teach best, which is I intuited and discerned and listened and trusted and let the story unfold in its new form onto the page.
I think that's very impressive, because there's so many things that used to be fixed, and you had to do it this way, and you had to do it that way. And it's amazing when you use your intuition and your guides and your muses, and you go ahead and do it a way that people perceived was unacceptable, so you wrote it out. And then all of a sudden they're going, hey, yeah, this would work.
Well, it's interesting because in all my books for writers, and actually in my memoir as well, I have a list of rules. And the rules is kind of in quotation marks, because, and they're all different because it depends on what I'm writing about. But the first rule and the last rule in all of them is there are no rules. And everything else is just kind of, you know, guidance along the way. So really, when I was looking on the Borders bookshelves at the time for books on screenwriting, all they were rules. Rule after rule, you have to do it this way, you must do it that way, you cannot not do it this way. And I just threw my arms up in frustration, because I can't write that way. I can't live that way. I can't be that way. And so that was kind of the challenge, to find a way to do it that worked for me and that would create a screenplay that was good.
And when can we see this movie? When can we see
that? Well, it's not in production yet. It's still in the early stages. And there will be three films, by the way, because there's going to be one film for each book, The Moon Quest, The Star Quest, and The Sun Quest. Hopefully, The Moon Quest will be out in a year or so. You have to understand that fantasy is filled with visual effects. Just think Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter. And that's expensive. So in order to do this film right, you know, the producer needs a budget that matches that, and that's a lot harder
to
pull off. Yeah, than a small little indie that only cost $1 million or $2 million or $3 million. Only, ha ha. You know?
we'll be looking for it, and I'm sure that I'm going to order the books in the next couple of days and read through it. Tell me more. I'm in the process of writing my autobiography. I think I'm at 1985, and I got 280,000 words. It seems like this goes on and on. I mean, you know, I read, there's so much to tell. And I have someone to publish it for me, which is great. But it feels bulky to me, and yet it feels correct to me. Wow, you know, I mean, just I'm not sure about that whole space of less is more or tell everything. What do you think about memoirs or autobiographies?
Well, first, there is a difference between a memoir and an autobiography. A memoir is kind of more impressionist, and it's less this happened then, and more experiential in a sense, your experience of your life. And it doesn't start necessarily on day one and take you up to yesterday. So whereas an autobiography is more likely to be the whole thing. So when I wrote mine, it was definitely a memoir. And I had, you know, in true Mark David Gerson form, I didn't want to write the memoir. I thought, who the hell wants to read this? You know, I was speaking all the words my students speak back at me, to me, you know.
You were hearing them and you... That's just pretty interesting, because what I've done is when I went back and studied with my teachers, and when I got a lesson, and at the end of the chapter when I got a teaching from a teacher, I have a quote from a student in the future of a couple pages of paragraph who I taught that same lesson to, and how that happened for them. So I've got 100 pages of my students and my apprentices, so I would go, you know, off to the Amazon or wherever I went, learn the lesson, I tell you about that, and then right after that is the student having me teach them that lesson.
Right.
But
right.
There's so many. Well, I'm not going to complain about it. I'm going to just work on it as best as I can.
Let me just offer you this, which, you know, is just all I can do is offer something intuitive, because obviously I haven't read the book, but I haven't read the manuscript. The first thing is to remember that you're not in charge, the book is. It may be your life, but it's the book's expression of your life. And if you listen to the book, as I listen to the MoonQuest story, if you trust the book to guide you and get out of the way, you will come up with whatever is the perfect form, the perfect length, the perfect way of putting it, of crafting it. The other piece of that is be open to it not being exactly what you thought it was going to be. Boy, does that happen
I
a lot.
Have a bathroom use. Anytime I'm washing my hands or being in the bathroom, it tells me, do you know you forgot this and this story? Don't you remember that? And so I run out and write it down on a pad of paper, and the next time I'm writing. So
right.
For some reason, when I go into the bathroom and I'm washing my hands and cleaning my face, I have a bathroom use who tells me, don't you remember this? You should bring this. And I'm like, okay. Less and less reluctantly as we're going along.
Sure. Well, the other thing to remember, I think, and that's really important when it comes to memoir, is that, but it's true, I think, for everything we write, in the first instance, we're writing it for ourselves. Because it becomes a teaching for us. And in it being a teaching for us, then it becomes a teaching for others. So, you know, you may have to write all this out in your first draft because you may need it. When you get to subsequent drafts, you may be guided into ways of winnowing it down.
Oh, yes. And, you know, and I put it off. I'm 75 now. And, I was asked this 5-6 years ago or 7 years ago, and I put it off. And earlier people say, you should write about your life. And I was like, well, I need to write this book, and I need to write that book. And, you know, and I went and wrote those books. And now at 75, I'm looking at this, and I'm going, okay, you know, you got to finish this here in the next 6 or 8 months, you know. What was the most spiritual experience you've ever had?
Oh, wow.
Well, not the most, just probably one that comes to mind.
That's what I want to say with you. But before I do that, I just want to tell you, I do have a book on memoir writing as well, so you can check that out.
I will definitely buy it. I could use all the energy and direction from spirit, and books are really direction from spirit. Because you stand there, you have 100 choices, and you pick them up and look at them, put them down. I've had books fall off the bookshelf onto me.
Sure.
So I would do that. So let's get back to your most spiritual experience.
This is a story I tell in my memoir, which is called Acts of Surrender, a writer's memoir. And it takes place in 1997. During 3 months in 1997, I was on an open-ended road trip. I left Toronto, didn't know where I was going. I would ultimately end up in Sedona, but I didn't know that. This was, I guess, about a month before the journey ended, and I found myself in Boise, Idaho. And I'd had my very first experience of channeling the night before. It kind of freaked me out because, you know, like everybody else, I have my control issues, and I wasn't all that happy about giving up another piece of control. So I had a kind of tentative experience, and, you know, I dealt with it. And the next night, I'm at a different hotel in Boise because I planned to leave and ended up not leaving for reasons that aren't important to the story. And I was staying at the Shiloh Inn. And if anybody knows the Shiloh Inn chain, they have steam rooms, not saunas, but old-fashioned steam rooms. So I check in, and I was traveling with a dog. I leave my dog in the room. I think, oh, a steam room, how cool. So I get my bathing suit, and I go into the steam room. No one else is there. And I sit back, and I close my eyes. And within moments, I sense a presence. So my eyes, and of course, there's nobody there.
Oh, God.
And so I close my eyes again, and I get a very clear sense of this presence. He is tall. He's somewhat muscular. He's wearing a white robe. He's wearing a gold coronet. He's got a beard. And he introduces himself to me by name. And, you know, I'm somewhat skeptical. But we had this silent conversation back and forth, and I don't remember a whole lot about that, but the early part of the conversation, but at a certain point in the conversation, this is where it gets interesting, he says to me, because this is so close to the anniversary of your father's death, my father died when I was 13, so back in 1968, he has something to say to you. And I sense my father's presence, and it's very real. Again, there's nobody in the room. I'm lifting up my sleeves, I have to backtrack and say that my father was never, I mean, he died when I was 13, and he was always emotionally absent, again, for reasons that I speculate on in the book, not important to the story right now, and in the steam room with the Shiloh Inn in Boise, Idaho, he apologizes to me, and I burst into tears. And we have a brief exchange, and then I sense nobody there. I open my eyes, and of course, there's nobody there. And after I kind of collect myself, I go back to the hotel room, and I fire up my laptop where I keep a list of significant dates. I think to myself, I wonder what the actual anniversary of my father's death is. I knew it was around that time. I couldn't know the exact date. I look it up, and it was that day.
That's pretty coincidental, no accidents.
Indeed. So I don't know if that's the most powerful experience I've had, but it's certainly one that sticks with me all these years later.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, letting ourselves know that there are spirits there and letting us know that there's wisdom and light beings out there that don't have necessarily the same type of bodies or the same type of energies as we do it, and listen to them. Most of them make sense. If it's bullshit, you know, don't eat for 24 hours, go jump off a bridge, you know.
Right.
I don't hear that. They never tell me what to do. They give me things to think about,
right.
Opinions,
right.
You know what I mean, and they stir my creativity. You know, so it's great to have spiritual experience. I remember I was hitchhiking through Mexico in 59 and 68. I hitchhiked through South America and Mexico all by myself, female. I was sitting on a rock someplace, and I was eating a piece of food or something. And a spirit sat next to me, and he looked at me and says, "What's up? Why do you still have a body?" And I looked at him and said, "Well, why do you don't?" And he says, "Now, that's a long story." And he said, "That's a long story." And he proceeded to talk to me for half an hour.
Well.
And, you know, you have these experiences if you have the opening, the space in your life to have them. Because if you're closed down and if you're judgmental or if you're not open to seeing what isn't necessarily physically sound or hearing what isn't necessarily an audio voice but an inner voice, it's
sure.
not going to happen. And
exact same thing is true when you're writing. It's exact same. All that applies to your creativity and your writing.
And it's really interesting for me. When I sit down and I intend to write, I can type a sentence that will be a misspelling and I will miss a period or miss a comma. When I am actually writing, I can go 3, 4, 5 pages without making a mistake. So then I know that I'm aligned and attuned.
Sure.
So, you know, so that's, you know, you sit down, it takes half an hour for one line, go up, get up, do something else, be something else, and get back down to the work when it's time. What else do you have to tell our listeners that's important for them about their creativity and having 8 or 9 books and having so much intention and manifest that intention? What do you have to tell our listeners?
I want to go back to what you were just talking about the sentence taking 20 minutes, because one of the things that is kind of the cornerstone, the foundation of what I teach, what I write about, is that you don't do that. You keep writing regardless. You always keep moving forward. You do not stop for any reason, because that's where the blocks kick in. That's where the judgment kicks in. That's where the censorship kicks in. That's where the second-guessing kicks in. That's where the watering down kicks in. And if you keep going, even if you're writing nonsense, just to keep going, then you will touch the truth, and you can always go back in a future draft and fix it up later. So perhaps the most important thing is like when I used to teach in a classroom, I always write on the blackboard, write, don't think. Don't think. Just let the words come. Trust that the words will come, just as you trust that your breath will come.
Thank you. Thank you for that tip. I have gone like 8 hours and somebody stuck a sandwich or a salad by my side and I've eaten that. And sometimes when I write, that whole perception of time,
yes.
It doesn't, you know, I don't feel like I've sat and wrote for 8 hours or, you know, whatever, you know. Has that happened to you where it's a whole other energy?
Yeah, I think athletes talk about that as being in the zone. You're so into what you're doing and in this case into your passion, that time, which really has no meaning anyhow, has no meaning. I mean, time is our concept of linear time is artificial anyhow. So perhaps what we're experiencing is the reality of time, which is not linear at all.
Oh well, that, you know, metaphysically, spiritually, the whole concept of time is in question. You know, is it all the same time? Is it now? Is it the past? Is it the future? It's important to do what you're doing, and if you're writing, you're writing, you know?
Right.
Stay with it.
Well, one of my rules for writing is be in the moment, which, of course, is very familiar to anybody who has any kind of spiritual practice.
Since Be Here Now, 40, 50
yeah.
years ago? We're coming up in just a second to the commercial break, and we're going to take some questions after the half hour. The number is 646-716-9663. And take a deep breath.
Yeah.
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
Well, Mark David, here we are again. And I understand that you're also a photographer. And I think I've, at one point in time, I spent some time in one of your classes, maybe in New York or something. Tell me about the ability to be so creative in so many different ways.
Well, of course, I can't explain where my creativity comes from any more than I can really explain where my creative blocks came from. I think, as I said at the very beginning, we are all naturally and innately creative. None of us is uncreative, even though many of us believe that we're not, and certainly I believed that when I was younger. And I think for me, photography is very much like, well, the art I do is very much like the writing I do. It's about being in the moment, it's about being present. It's about seeing not with my eyes so much, but seeing with my heart and using the camera. And, you know, I use mostly my iPhone, so you don't need fancy equipment. Using my camera to capture a piece of that essence, because, of course, just as with writing, the essence is invisible. So we're using a human tool to take what is invisible and infinite, be it the energy of a story or the energy of a flower, to make it manifest. In effect, it's a manifestation technique. We're taking something that is, again, by its very nature, cannot be contained, and we are using tools to contain it. And so when I go for a walk, especially if I'm going for a walk to photograph, it's very much like a meditation. I am looking not at scenery necessarily or at buildings or whatever I'm looking at. I'm just kind of looking with an openness and using the camera and my intuitive ability to capture it. I mean, I'm not sure I can explain it any other way because I don't really know what I'm doing.
it's amazing sometimes to me how when I try, how hard it is and how simple what I'm being, how simple things unfold for me. You know, it's being with that energy. And I've had a few blocks too, and thank God I've overcome them. And I'm sure they were lessons and blessings in disguise. So creativity is a wonderful energy to maintain and to have. So take a deep breath. Okay. Well, where are you living now?
These days I'm in New Mexico. It's very interesting. I was kind of dropped here. when I mentioned earlier that a three-month extended road trip I took back in 97, well, in 2004, I took off for what I thought was something similar, ended up being a 30-month road odyssey, where I crossed the country two or three times. I was giving workshops. I was doing some writing workshops, mostly just that's when I was doing the sound work. I was doing my art at the time. And when I left, okay, I left Sedona at the end of a marriage. That's why I left Sedona. The first two places I went back to California, where I had been frequently. And as I traveled back east through Sedona to see my daughter, I knew that my next stop had to be a place I'd never been to, which was New Mexico. And over those 30 months, leaving Sedona aside, I went back there for family reasons. I spent more time stopping in mostly Albuquerque, strangely, not Santa Fe, but sometimes in Santa Fe, stopping in New Mexico than any other place. And then I left twice and come back. I left twice briefly. I left once in 2008 for about 6 weeks, again on a much shorter odyssey, and was pulled back. And I left again in 2010, and again was gone for about 10 weeks and was pulled back. And since I've been back, since I came back in 2010, so the past 4 years, I have experienced the most creatively productive time of my life ever. So I don't know what the energy is here for me, and I don't know how long I'm here or why, because it certainly wouldn't be my conscious mind's first place to be. But, you know, I'm not entirely in charge.
It's pretty funny. I live in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and I came here 20-some years ago, and I stayed for a couple of years. And then I went on the road, 250 workshops a year for 10 years. And then I ended up back in the Hot Springs. And I believe that the earth energy in certain places on the planet is important for you, but each person has certain places at different times of their life, and either you found it or you will find it, but sometimes the city, the state, doesn't make any sense, and the energy does. So
absolutely.
Now I live in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and I have a dome that seats 300 people, and I do some workshops here and some services here, and now people come to me, thank God,
nice.
After 50 years of traveling, and people come all over the world to Hot Springs to study with me. So
nice.
It's been a very, it's fed me, my creativity, it's fed me, and if you would have ever told me 20 years ago or 25 years ago that I would live in Arkansas, I would have told you, forget it. You know what I mean?
And, I do.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're living someplace and you look at it and go, I don't know why, I don't care, but this is where I'm supposed to be.
Today. Because it can change tomorrow. That's the other thing. Well, Hot Springs is lovely. On that 8-week odyssey in 2008, I actually passed through Hot Springs the first time.
Oh, if
time.
You're ever back through here again,
come and spend
some time with me.
Not
so I am working on something really interesting now. It's called the E8. And the E8 is the theory of everything. And it's kind of way out there in the land of physics. And E8 is the only theory that gravity can be put into, and the theory works. And E8 gives us a picture of outer space where certain subatomic particles are emanated, and I guess all 18 or 20 of them. And I am looking at this beautiful map of the E8, which is very... to me, there's a certain harmony and beauty in it. And I am working on the point and the theory that wherever there is sentient life or consciousness, this is why these places in space are emanating these subatomic particles. So it's been very, very interesting to get into the physics. I've tried to hire a couple of tutors from several universities, but when they find out how metaphysical, spiritual I am, and I need some help with the theories, they're like, never mind, you know? So I'm grinding through all these physics, this language and these, books, 100, 200, 300 pages thick, and I'm looking and searching for what marks consciousness and in the realm, and I've come up with several different things. So that's my new pet project. In the 50s, when I went to college, the first thing I wanted to be was a nuclear physicist or a physicist. Mm. But then I ended up healing a bunch of people, so that's by the way. And now all of a sudden, I'm 75 years old, and I'm back into physics again. And what a complete, round, beautiful, beautiful circle that is. So I'm going to be having some work here quickly up on the E8, which you can look at, and Garrett Lisi had Ted did a beautiful talk on the E8, so you can look that up. And what is your next endeavor?
I'm working on a book right now, which I think will be perhaps for some of your listeners might be the most interesting one yet, because it's called Birthing Your Book, Even If You Don't Know What It's About. And
wow.
That came to me. That was actually a talk I gave years ago in Sedona. And the reason I titled the talk that at the time was when I lived in Sedona, so many people would come to me and say, you know, either I know I have this book I'm supposed to write, but I have no idea what it's about, or you know, I went to a reader and I was told I should be writing books, but I don't know what. And so with and other questions like that, I thought, well, you know, you don't actually have to know what your book is about to start writing it. And so that's really the kind of thesis of the book I'm working on now, Birthing Your Book, Even If You Don't Know What It's About. I talked a little bit about that in my first book for writers, which is called The Voice of the Muse, Answering the Call to Write, but I'm going into it in more detail. After that, I had a novel that I'd started and I need to go back to, and another memoir, apparently, this is kind of what I'm intuiting, that really focuses specifically on my writing journey, and that is tentatively titled The Only Thing That Matters Is That I'm Writing. So I've got my work cut out for me. Plus, a year ago, I decided, God knows why, and God ain't talking, a year ago I decided that I would take the three Quintana stories, The Moon Quest, The Star Quest, The Sun Quest, that I'd already adapted as screenplays, and write stage musicals of them. And I have written the first draft of these of each one, The Moon Quest, The Star Quest, The Sun Quest, with lyrics, not music yet. And at some point, it'll be time to go back to that. So my muse is a serious taskmaster and keeps me very busy.
Wow, that's a lot to do. You know, in the back of my mind, being so conscious about people's guides and how people's guides talk to my guides so I can tell, give information and how guides talk to each other. I've been wanting to do something like a screenplay that's only the spirit guides are there. The people go through it, but their life and the spirit guides are like, hey, how come my person doesn't listen? How did you get your person to listen? Well, you know, we can't touch them and we can't say no to them, so how can we get this lesson across? So I've been thinking about maybe I got two different books that are due with two different publishers here in the next 18 months. I was thinking about writing a story from the spirit guide's point of view, having real people in it, well, maybe not real, fictional characters that are human, that are human, and the spirit guides. And I think I was in Minnesota once, and I was teaching a workshop or co-teaching, and we had 500 people there. And I went into the hotel dining room while they were writing an exercise, and the hotel dining area was full of spirit guides talking to each other. And the waitress came over, and I wanted something to drink. I said to her, can I have something to drink? She says, wow, yeah, we're really busy. And I looked around this place. It seats about 800 people, and there was me and one other guy physically sitting there. She goes, yeah, I'm really busy, you know. And I saw these spirit guides talking about their humans.
Great team.
So that's kind of been really back there in the back for maybe a decade or so, or maybe two decades. And just watching, you know, the spirit guides, when they finally realize that I can listen, how excited they get and how much they start blabbering that they want to tell their human, that they want to tell their humans,
right,
you know?
Right.
So I was thinking maybe after I get these two books in that's what I would work on, because I have yet to do something of fiction. So that sounds.
So I've got my screenwriting book up there for you too. So you know I'm writing a step ahead of what you need.
Well, I'm sure my secretary will sit down tomorrow and purchase most of these books for me. I'm interested in the Moon Quest, Star Quest, and, of course, writing your memoir, the Book of Messages, Writer's Unblock. I'm interested in all of these things, and you're such an illuminated being, and I'm sure your words will light up for me. Can I buy your books at Amazon?
Yes, if you go to my Amazon author page, which is amazon.com/author/MarkDavidGerson, there's that one word, Mark David Gerson again, you'll find all my books, all 10 of them right now. They're all available in paperback or in ebook form. And the only one, there's a slight delay on my most recent one called Dialogues with the Divine, which is in ebook, but the print version has had some technical issues, and that should be back available by the end of next week, I think.
Okay, well, I'm sure I can learn a lot from you. So it looks like we're not having very many callers tonight, so we have about 15 minutes more. What message would you like to get across? Oh, you have a caller?
Yep.
Great.
Carol, you're on.
Sorry, let me just turn off my speaker.
Hello, who's this?
Hi, Star, it's Carol. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Thanks for the info. It's been a little hectic because I've had to listen on the phone and the computer at the same time. I don't know what was some technical difficulty. But anyway, I was getting the gist of most of it. My question is this. I'm in school right now, and I have, assignments due fairly regularly. And some of the time, it's really not a big deal. And some of the time, I procrastinate. My house has never been so clean. You know, I mean, how do you get high? I don't know what that's all about. And
okay, Mark, David, do you want to handle that?
Absolutely. It's funny because I used to tell when I would teach writing workshops, I would used to joke that writers had the cleanest bathrooms in the universe, because some writers would rather do anything than sit down to write. So I get I get exactly what you're saying. Here's how I coped with The Moon Quest, which was my first full length book, not my first novel, because I had a lot of resistance. I had a lot of resistance to giving up control, the kind of control I needed to give up to write a story when I knew nothing about it. And so what I would do is I would make writing the very first thing I did in the morning. In fact, for a while there, I did it before I got out of bed. And I was writing longhand, and I've done that since using a laptop. There's a couple of things. First of all, it beats the resistance over the head, because if you're doing it first thing, there's nothing left to resist, because by the beginning of the day, you have your day ahead of you. So writing first thing in the morning, even if it's only for 10 or 15 minutes, first of all, get it done, and you don't spend the rest of the day cleaning your bathroom to avoid writing, which may not be good for the bathroom, but it's good for you. So that's the first thing I'll suggest is to do it as early in the day as you can, to avoid the distractions that would get in the way. The other thing
is, well, it doesn't help that I'm not a morning person either, so I'm not at my best.
No, I'm not.
In the morning.
Trust me, I'm not either. Believe me.
Okay.
So when I was working on The Star Quest, which is the second novel, I had it wasn't the world's worst job. It was my worst job ever. I'd had some financial stuff. I had to go get a job, and I was actually working in the stock room at age 50-something of a Hobby Lobby, which if you're in the right part of the country, Hobby Lobby is kind of like Ben Franklin or Michaels.
Yep.
And it was physically demanding. It was long hours. It was crummy pay. and I hated it more than anything I'd ever done, but I needed to do it. And I woke up one morning, I thought, the only thing that's going to keep me sane is if I'm writing. And I said, well, but when? You know, I wake up early, I go to get myself down to the store, I come back, I'm exhausted, and I eat dinner, I drop into bed. So what am I going to write? And what case, so I kind of went back and forth. So what do other writers do? Well, some writers, you know, stay up late. And I thought, that ain't going to work because I can't keep my eyes open. Some writers get up at 5 in the morning. Well, I'm like you. I'm not a morning person. And that would work for like 2 days. So the question I kept asking was, how can I structure this in a way that it's sustaining, that I will keep doing it? And I went back and forth over time, and finally what I came up with was, I can set my alarm for 15 minutes earlier. I can do that. I can sustain that. And I will write in bed for those 15 minutes before I get up. And that's what I did. And it wasn't much, but it was what I could do. And in that case, I actually took the manuscript with me and kind of played with it during my breaks and my lunchtime, and spent more time on my days off. And what was interesting was doing that, even though, you know, sometimes I wrote a sentence. I mean, it felt like I was churning out, you know, pages and pages in 15 minutes. But what that did, two things, is it helped make the job bearable because it started my day with something that was important to me. And it also created a momentum so that when some months later, I didn't quit the job. The job kind of quit me, which is kind of a weird story, but we'll see that another time. I had such a regularity, and I was so into it, even though I didn't have lots of words, that by July the draft. So I started working. I started doing this in December or January. By July, the draft was finished. So what you have to ask yourself is, what is reasonable for me? What can I do that I will sustain without punishing myself? Because we're talking about punishing discipline at the beginning. What can I do that is realistic? One of the things that when I have coaching clients who come to me and I say, okay, what are you going to produce between now and our next session? And they throw out, you know, like, I don't know, 10,000 words or something really ridiculous. And I say, okay, can you really do that? They say, well, maybe not. So they cut it in half. I say, okay, cut it in half again. Because what I want you to do is set a goal that you would have to be brain dead not to achieve. Because then you achieve your goal and you feel really good about it. If you set the goal for double and do half, you feel crummy. So if you're going to have the same output, do something that makes you feel good, that sustains you and sustains the project, whatever it is, and keeps you going. And then you can slowly build up, you know, your goals. But don't, I mean, the conventional wisdom is to set really high goals, and I say no, set really low goals and then build up, because then you feel good about yourself, you feel good about the writing, and you can celebrate what you've achieved rather than punishing yourself for what you have not.
I think that's very good advice. Did you get what you needed, sweetie?
I think so. Rather than, you know, having the deadline and I do it all at the last minute and it all gets done, but it's stressful. So
yeah, well, if you have issues with distractions, I don't think there's time to go into it now, but most of my books on for writers have ways to deal with kind of common distractions. So you can check those out, and some libraries even have the voice of the muse, so you can check that out.
All right.
Thank you.
Great. Good luck.
Thanks. Thank you.
Mark Russin, do we have another caller?
Yeah, hold on, just switching the thing around. Steve from New York.
Hey, Star.
Hey, Stig. How are you, sweetie?
Not too well, actually. I'm still stuck in this quagmire, and I don't know what to do about it.
Okay, so what is your question tonight?
Well, nothing is going well. Not really well.
Okay.
And I just did an audition, which I should have been great at, because I'm great at that material. And I wasn't. And I, you know, I just thought that, you know, I don't know. It's just everything is wrong.
Okay.
After the amount of work I've put in, it, you know.
Okay. So face what is right, what is correct, what is appropriate. If you feel that 359 degrees of your life is wrong, then what is the one degree do you feel is appropriate or right? You need to face where there's light in your life.
Well, Matt and I are getting along better.
Well, that's good. Your relationship is good. How many movies have you been in? 50?
Probably more than that, but I can't get arrested now. So I should be at the next level of my work. So
people would give a little finger to be in 50 movies.
So right,
no rights and no buts. This is a time where you fall back to gratitude. You've done stand-up for 700 nights in a row. You've been in good movies. I want you to make a list of everything that you've been grateful for to clear out all this wrongness. Because God, Spirit, Energy has gifted you with many, many good teachers and many, many good learning experiences. So look for the light, darling. You got your relationship with your significant other is great. How many years was that in turmoil? You know? Look for the light. It's time for a 10-page gratitude list. Yes. Do you understand?
Yes, and I'm working with you Friday, actually.
Well, that's good. I expect 10 pages of things to be grateful for before your appointment on Friday.
Can I add something?
Yes.
Sure.
Because this is something that comes up with writers all the time, and it goes back to what I said before about goals. So instead, at the end of every day, here's what I would like you to do. Not for me, I won't be talking to you again, but I would like you to go through your day ignoring all the things that you believe went bad for you and making a list of all the things, however tiny, that went right for you.
And Mark?
I'm sorry?
Mark, do you need a composer to work with? I have a great composer who's a client and friend of Star's. If you need a composer to work with.
Send the information to Star and she can send it on to me or go to my website. There's a contact page, and you can. It's markdavidgerson.com.
Okay.
Mark with a K, David Gerson. There's a contact page. Absolutely, give me a contact, give me a shout. But
you'll love him.
But focus.
You'll love him,
but spend your nights before you go to bed focusing on all the good, all the achievements, all the accomplishments, even if it's as little as getting up in the morning, whatever it is. Focus on it's another riff on what Star is suggesting. Focus on what you have accomplished, not on what you have failed to accomplish in your mind.
Okay.
I love you, Steve. Talk to you Friday.
I love you. Thank you, Mark.
You're very welcome.
Mark Watson, anybody else there for us?
Yeah, it's funny how you have to switch between the marks. No, you're all set for now.
All right.
15 minutes.
All right. And, you know, it's really interesting how actors and dancers and people who live in the creative world still seem to need to learn about what stops their creativity, what creates their creativity, and what about attitude? How important is attitude here, Mark David?
I think it's very important. It goes back to what I was saying to the previous caller. We spend so much time. But I think, you know, creative people are particularly sensitive, especially ones who are out in the limelight. But we spend so much time, whether we're you know, actors or writers or whatever, focusing on what we have done wrong. We spend very little time celebrating what we have done, what we have accomplished. And so, you know, the old spiritual law, you know, energy goes where your attention goes. And so if we spend all our time focusing on the unpleasantness, we simply attract more unpleasantness. If we spend time focusing on what we have achieved, then, A, we see that we've actually achieved something instead of assuming we haven't, and we attract more achievement. So I think that attitude is really important. And, you know, when you're insecure and when you're highly sensitive, then that can be more difficult, which makes that kind of a practice even more important.
Okay, Mark David Gerson, look him up. Buy his books. He will definitely light up your creativity. You can also go to masteryourlight.com, where I have several classes and videos. There are some fun quizzes to do and free talks of mine. Pay attention. When you write something, it manifests. First we think it, then we see it, then we speak it. And when you put it on black and white, on paper, yellow and blue, I don't care. When it's written down, it manifests. Is there anything else you want to say, Mark, before we leave?
Just
on behalf of Spiritual
Connection
Radio, thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlivening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, visit her website at www.starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660.